Sure.
All right, we'll go ahead and call the Public Safety Committee potential quorum of the council to order for Tuesday, May 6th, 2025 at 6:30 p.m. Are there any changes to the agenda?
No.
All right. Public comment on items not listed on the agenda. Nothing? Anybody want to talk about something? All right, minutes from the public safety meeting on 12/3 of 24. Everybody check those out? Okay. Any corrections, mistakes? Anybody caught? I didn't catch him, but that's my area of weakness. Okay. All right. Then we got the CNT presentation.
Hello.
Sweet.
Officer Marler.
So thanks for letting me come talk to you guys tonight. I just want to take a few minutes to talk about the crisis negotiation team, kind of what we do, why we do it, and a few small changes that I think might make a big difference. So the goal of CNT is pretty simple. Our objective is to preserve life. We respond when emotions are high and situations are unpredictable, barricaded subjects, people in crisis, sometimes even hostages. Our job is to kind of slow things down, build a line of communication, build rapport with the subject, and do everything that we can to resolve the situation peacefully. Doesn't always make the headlines, but when it works, it prevents tragedies. And it helps build trust between law enforcement and the community that we serve. So let's kind of give a brief example of kind of why I wanted to talk tonight. So this last Sunday, not 2 days ago, Sunday before last, there was a CNT call out down in Crestwell. Some of you may know I live down in Crestwell. The call out was actually less than a half mile from my house. I was off that day. I was actually getting ready to head to a training over in Sub River for, oddly enough, Western States Hostage Negotiations training. This is about 11:30 in the afternoon. Text the team lead, says, hey, I'm available, I'm just down the road. And a couple other people messaged him, so he said the three of us can go down there. Me being the closest, first to arrive on scene under the CNT, there are already plenty of deputies down there. I arrived in my personal vehicle. I didn't have a vest, I didn't have a radio. I had my CNT gear on, which is just a polo that says CNT. I had my gun on my badge. When I pulled up to where I was told to meet, which is the corner of Cobalt and Harvey, the deputies that were there were wondering why this white Tesla was pulling up to their scene, which is completely understandable. You know, they didn't know I was responding in my personal vehicle. So I show up, deputy runs my plate, dispatch airs my plate over the radio, says, oh, that plate returns to Tyler and Amber Marler at 88 Almond Way, Crestwell, Oregon. So now my plate's associated with this CAD, you know, this barricaded subject CAD. Not the end of the world, but not something I want in the CAD. Deputy approaches me, we talked, told him, hey, I'm part of the CNT team, I was told to meet here. Anyways, parked my car somewhere else, and then he gave me a ride up to the command post. Once I got up there, we started getting all the information and everything. The second CNT member showed up. He had his vest and everything. And the way that we were actually communicating with this subject was through just voice contact. So we were at the base of some stairs, and he was on an upper level. So wouldn't it have made sense for me to go in there because I didn't have my vest, right? So the other CNT member that had his vest went in there and started negotiating with the subject. He was in there for about 5 to 6 hours talking to him. Kind of the reason I bring that up, I know it's kind of my responsibility as a CNT member to be ready to respond to these types of calls. Normally I have an under vest that I keep at home. In this situation, my vest is actually still here at work. I don't take this home at the end of every shift because it's a lot to pack around. I do take my firearm home with me and my badge. I don't take a radio because this is the only one I have, and it's kind of a pain in the butt to get in and out of my vest. So I just kind of brought that up to, you know, see the importance of potentially having a take-home vehicle, and if that's not feasible, maybe even just a go bag of some sort, a second vest that I can keep at my house, ready to go. Whether that be a second vest and a radio, but that's kind of why I just want to talk tonight. So appreciate you guys letting me talk. You guys have any questions for me?
How long were you on that call?
We were there for about 8 hours, 11:30 to about 7:30.
I'll say I was working that day out in Harrisburg, mm-hmm. and I heard the whole thing. Like, we were monitoring.
Running my plate. And
I didn't hear that part, but
even this.
But I did. It went on for a long time, and at one point there was a shot fired. From the suspect.
Yes.
And so I see the importance of being on the team, being able to go to all the trainings, mm-hmm. being able to be ready, you know, to respond, because you never know when and where it's going to happen. So I just want to say thank you mm-hmm. for being a part of that.
Absolutely.
I think it's an important asset to have, and I'm glad that it's like a multi-agency thing that you guys are able to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Chief Harold, or Sheriff Harold, actually showed up on scene, and after everything was done, he thanked myself and Sergeant Dan Miller from Coburg for being part of the team. So that was pretty cool.
That's pretty neat, Tyler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, any other questions?
Mm-hmm. You guys don't have any placards to use for personal vehicles?
No.
You know, I'm talking like a dashboard placard.
Yeah.
Or if this were to continue with a personal vehicle, I could see bare minimum something like that that would have Junction City's name on it, badge that can be up on the dash, up in the window, so that you don't get your plate. Having been a person, had another agency put his own personal phone number into one of their reports on an arrest, I understand exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, the reason that we bring this up, really, it's to highlight our involvement in the interagency team. It's super valuable. The 8 hours that one of our officers spent dealing with a person in crisis down in Crestwell happens to be in his backyard. This actually, his position fits in our new take-home policy as a vehicle person that we could give a car to take to Crestwell, because he's subject to call-outs all the time, just like this is an example. So that the tricky part is that when we just was a year ago, we had negotiations, and this came up in negotiations, and the city's stance was no for his particular position. So I don't want to go against what the city's stance is, just because we have a policy that is a little bit open to allow us to do this. So one of the things is we're trying to lay the foundations is so that you as the Public Safety Committee and as counselors can understand that there are times and needs for officers to be able to respond from their residence. Yeah, we don't want them all to live in the injunction if they can, but that's not always going to be the case. In this case, you know, not only could it have, you know, he driving up, you know, Sergeant, not to point any fun at this part, but the term that we tend to use in law enforcement, fat, dumb, and happy. You drive up because you think you know where you're going, but the deputies are on high alert, the officers are on high alert, they don't know what's happening, they don't know why this car's coming mm-hmm. into their crime scene. You know, stuff that we just want to avoid, bad situations, and it's bad enough that the plate gets ran, that that they don't recognize it from far away, or because when he goes to training, he goes in a patrol car. Because that's where we want them to go in a patrol car, so they don't all know each other's personal cars, and so, we're super happy. Him and Tim are both on the team. They sometimes go to training together. Sometimes they alternate. So depending on what shifts we're on, but it's a valuable tool that doesn't always get used in Junction City. But when it gets deployed in Junction City, you get an entire team of it with it. So. You know, that's kind of why the whole topic of a take-home car was brought up here, and it just didn't magically happen when a good policy changed. That's the reason why.
I just think it's awesome that the different agencies all work together, that's a plus. It's been a while. And, you know, I really applaud you, Tyler. This is pretty darn important.
Thank you.
How many call-outs have you been on so far?
I've gone on, I think, four. So I've gone two in my personal vehicle. The first one was back in, February of last year, down in Cottage Grove. Again, I was at home, and so Cresswell's, 10 minutes away. I went to that in my personal vehicle. I was still new to the team then, so I wasn't primary on that one. I was just intel, kind of gathering information on the subject, things like that. Then the other two, one was actually during a CNT training. We were all training, actually we were going to Cresswell. We were on a lunch break, got a CNT call out to help Springfield with a barricaded subject. I had my patrol car then because I was at training. And then the other one was I was on duty during day shift and had to respond over to the Valley River Center area for a barricaded subject then, too.
So. Wow.
So is there, I haven't kept track. Is there enough cars right now that it wouldn't short anybody else if there was a take-home car?
Mm-hmm. He's actually assigned one of the new ones. He's bigger boned than a lot of other ones.
It's because he's the favorite.
Big boned. That's what I tell everybody. I'm big boned.
So he's actually assigned one of the new cars, and there's enough cars for him to do a take-home car. I laid out the reasons why it hadn't been done already. So, do you have any more questions for him?
As a citizen, you were nervous about them running your private plate and stuff, but I don't think you guys are on any frequency that anybody can pick up. There is no more scanner land.
County, I don't think it's encrypted, right?
So it's encrypted.
County is
encrypted. Yeah.
They're all encrypted. So I just want to say, great job for what you did, but I don't think you have to worry about that.
But I think what he's saying is that because they ran it during that call, it's attached. His plate's attached to that call now. If there was a recording,
public record.
Yeah.
If they did a FOIA request.
Yeah,
it's part of the permanent record.
Well, I was trying to make you feel like you're safer.
I'm not worried about.
Never
I'm not
really
worried
about that.
Yeah.
It's just
permanent.
Knowing
that it's out there.
Correct.
And what was that number? Your
my license number. It's pretty hard to forget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler.
All right. Department badge.
I'm going to be talking about that because I'm one that ran point on this project. One of the projects I have going on at the department. Basically, to break down these attachments. This first one's the quote to do the rework. The next page are the banners. These aren't the titles or the ranks that we're going to go with. This is just an example of the colors that he wanted us to approve on, which were the same as the previous ones. The larger badges are the new ones, and the smaller ones are the current ones. The adjustments where the animals are being removed from the state seal. The train's number is changed to match the number at Founders Park, and the initials and the legs are removed as well. Additionally, the officer badges will have numbers, which are on the example, 1 through 15. And someday maybe we'll have a lieutenant. Chief was thinking, and he can talk more about that. The lieutenant badge, which doesn't show here, but it will have the lieutenant bar at the bottom of the badge. And that's pretty much the gist of it. Anybody have any questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, or witticisms?
Is everybody happy with this? Everybody happy with this?
Sure.
Yeah. I was just explaining to Tyler about the numbers. The numbers are chief explained to me, like, number, Tyler will get number one because he's the most seniority in patrol, and then I'd have number two because I'm number two seniority in patrol. And then, like, say Tyler promoted or left, then I would be number one. So it'd be like a sense of, you know, like, you could see who's highest in patrol as far as seniority-wise.
So, and, you know, I'll say, I was thinking about that. That's how we did it in Tualatin. And so it was, if you looked at a Tualatin officer's badge, you could always tell. It's public and didn't really care, but we always knew who the most senior patrol person was. They are the lowest number badge. So, you know, not everybody wants to promote. And so not everybody wants to be a sergeant, not everybody wants to be a captain or lieutenant. But in our agency, it was kind of a badge of honor, no pun intended, to try and work your way up to badge number one. So seniority-wise, it showed that there was, you had to, when somebody leaves, we did a badge slide, so people turn in the badges move around. So, you know, on the day when they do a badge slide is when Fernando would probably get a complaint. So that way the badge would move, and then the person would say, "What's your badge number?" And the next day it'd be a different badge number. So
I'll play a little devil's advocate on that. Not that I'd ever wish it upon any of you guys, but there are those rare moments that do happen. And typically departments will retire a badge number for an officer lost. Mm-hmm. So okay. I know you guys have a DPSST number, but if you're doing badge numbers on the badge itself and something were to happen, is that taken into account, or how's that?
No, and that's sort of, I'm glad you were thinking about that. But we would retire badge number 5 or we would badge number 3, and that it'd be a badge of honor somewhere, the number 3. So, for instance, for a long time, so we had a guy that was badge number 2. He died of a heart attack while he was still employed with the Tualatin Police Department. Didn't die at work. They for 10 years, they retired as the number 2 badge. And so I don't know why they decided not to continue it. But that's what something that we would do.
Right.
Is already in there. I just didn't vocally say that.
So I know what the sheriff's office does. And they just recycle radio numbers until something happens, and then they retire that radio number. Mm-hmm. Talking to a friend of mine from CHP, and I didn't realize they did this, is that they leave whatever their higher number is, that's their badge number. Mm-hmm. And it stays with them all the way through. So whenever they run into another retired CHP trooper, they'll tell them their badge number, and they can kind of figure out where in the ranking. Yeah, when they were hired and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's not as all-encompassing as a DPST number.
Correct.
You know, you have corrections in there and you have
everybody
else with them. So, yeah.
So, just something to think about. I understand the whole moving around the seniority list. I did that myself a few times. But something to think about until you have to think. You know, think about it now before you have to think about it.
Well, and the other alternative that a lot of agencies do is they give you a badge number, and that badge stays with you the entire...
Forever, huh?
So like that.
Right.
We're small enough that would probably be financially difficult for us over time. As much as I'm hoping that this is a place where people want to spend the next 20, 30 years of their careers. And if they wanted to sign a piece of paper that says, I'll work with you for 20 years, we'll create a badge number for them to actually keep it and work for 20 years. But, you know, knowing that small agencies tend to sometimes be training grounds for bigger agencies, I just thought if we did a permanent badge number and this became your badge number, you know, do we really want to continue to pay the expense to continue to rotate badges out? So that's kind of my thinking.
Yep, no, not a problem. It's one of those questions you have to ask. So.
Appreciate it.
Not that. You guys don't ever wish any of that for you guys, so.
Yeah. Any questions from the audience?
Isaac, do you need anything from us, or?
Okay. No, we just wanted to share it with everybody, just so that everyone sees it, and if there were any concerns or anything, let's be brought up before we pay for anything, right?
And this is getting you how many at this price?
15.
Okay.
Yeah. more than 15.
No, it's 15 officer badges. So everybody would get a badge that they're currently wearing on their chest, and then they also get a flat badge that can go into the wallet.
Yeah. Okay.
So the problem with the size of the badges that we have now is that you have to customize the wallet in order to fit the, and then that's too big to fit in your pocket, as for most people's pockets. And then, so it's the badge is going to be downsized just a little bit. I know Isaac said that. And as far as I know, Isaac didn't put any initials in there, in any of the badges. So.
Nope.
No. Someone better check.
I feel like I deserve my initials.
If I'm number one, I need a written.
It's just the industry standard size. The company, V&V Manufacturing, they do a lot of police badges, so I just said, make it the industry standard, and it's exactly what it
is. Come on. No. Keep my comment to myself. With uniform stuff, does that have to go before council?
It's going to go before council because they got to figure out how to pay for it.
Okay.
The conversations have come up between the council members and public forums, and that this is an important project for council. It's not something that's currently budgeted, so it was slated to come, I think, next meeting. It's just an item. I know Councilor Hancock, who couldn't be here tonight, has an idea to where that could come from. And this has been supported by City Administrator Canope, and so, unless there's a big discussion over the dollar amount, and we would probably get more into details on what initials are in the current badge and why it's important that we get those out of there. So we try to just soft play badges and not get too in depth on that. So I think that would be, there'd be more support there other than less, I would assume.
Should be up.
Any other questions?
Anything else?
Nathan wanted to know what the size difference was.
Yeah, between the current badge and the new badge. So like half an inch, 2 inches?
Appetizer, full meal deal.
I think we got the full meal.
You do.
It's our shield.
I have my work phone, I can tell you.
At least you don't have to buy shields for anything.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You can just convert them all over.
Which, keep hiring people and hide behind the old shields. I think it was a half inch.
So,
yeah. I think it was a half inch. And you like that?
Are you listening? Yeah. What'd he say?
No, I did.
So he says he thinks it's a half an inch.
So, yeah, it's about right. That's so it's going to be, like Isaac says, is industry standard. I don't mind how big the badge is so much. It's just, why we're redoing it. I mean, there are certain things that you want people to look at. Like when I first saw them, I thought, those are big. Are those big? Are those bigger than normal? So you had to kind of look at it and think about it. And then, I like the design. I like the design of our patch. There's no reason to reinvent and remarket the entire and rebrand the entire department right now. So the easiest thing for us to do is take the badge, redesign it, take some stuff out of it that needs to take out of it. The number that's on the train is going to be matching the train that we have in our Founders Park, and so kind of point back into our history of Junction City a little bit with the badge. So. I'm super excited to get a change that way, so we'll see.
Well, I'm happy.
I know you.
Yes.
All right, any other questions on that?
Go to departmental updates.
Let's see. I'll try and go quicker on this than I normally do. So officers wise in the department, Thaddeus Fanning, who you guys have met, he's just about ready to be released solo. So I think that's next week, right? Mm-hmm. This week.
He has 1 week with Tim.
He's got one more week.
And then he's by himself.
Yeah, so he's doing great. There's nothing that's keeping him from being solo today other than we're trying to build an FTET program that that we can be proud of that says we have processes, that we have procedures, that we have steps that everybody has to go through, whether you're a lateral or whether you're a new hire. So we're just waiting for that to happen. We have two entry-level applicants that are in our background phase. We should be hearing a little bit about that. I'm surprised we haven't already. One of them had some yellow flags that were vetted out and turned out to not be as yellow as they initially appeared, so we're still moving forward with those two. Sergeant Serrano's here. He's still running our VIPS program. And if you don't know, our VIPS program is we have two active members. They're active in totally different and opposite ways, which is amazing. So Kelly Loper gets out and he works really hard on our abandoned vehicles and those type of calls, and he works really hard. I guess we're going to talk. We're going to watch Bobby. So. Can you fix that?
I don't know how. I just admitted him to the room.
Flip the screen.
Well, so he's the speaker.
Tell him to turn off his video. Tell him to turn off his video.
Bobby, turn your video off.
He doesn't know how.
So if he turns off his video, you can do show non-video participants. Unless you guys don't mind watching it.
As long as he keeps it like that.
Yeah.
Bobby, turn your video off.
He doesn't know how.
You're on mute.
Yeah, it's on mute. I'm on mute.
There we go. Whoop, he's back.
No.
Turn your video off.
Turn your video off.
There it is.
There.
Okay, turn your mic off now.
I'll mute him here too.
Can I see
that? There we go. He's giving. He's cut off.
So on the VIPs.
Yeah.
We have two active, very active members. We have a third one that we've recruited in, but mm-hmm. we're having a tough time. He still has a full-time job, so he's trying to get some training. So that's what I'm trying to do, and there's a fourth VIPS that right now we're trying to go through HR some issues, but potentially we'll have four VIPS here.
Oh, good. That's awesome.
Yeah, and kind of what I was saying is the two different types of personalities that we have, which is great, because one of our VIPs got CJIS certified so they can help Isaac. We have 100 boxes of old files that we have to go through one by one, and in order to have someone to look at police records, you need to get them CJIS cleared. So she went through the process, got cleared, and they've done like a couple hours already together, and he's been training her to have what she needs to look for, how to do things, if things need to be scanned, if they need to be just destroyed, or those kind of things. So that's awesome, and she's really very event-forward. She likes to help plan and organize events. At some point, you will probably see a shadow box or something to kind of honoring Dave Kaufman. She helped some of that work on some of that project. Fernando's finishing that project up. Done soon, hopefully. And like I said, Kelly's out, comes in a couple days a week, and he's got his own struggles in his life, but yet he finds value in providing services to our community. So it's a great program. We just have to have the right people in it. So Fernando's doing an awesome job running that program for us. Reserves. So our one and only reserve that we had resigned. So we, with our reserve program, when I got here, we had two reserves. One of them doing well in his job, decided he just didn't have the time commitment to put in. Originally thought that he might want to be a full-time police officer at some point. He works for Weyerhaeuser. It's just taken off for him, and he doesn't see this being what he wants to do. The other reserve we had some issues making sure that they were meeting the required time commitment that we need. As an agency, we need reserves so that want to come and work and be able to assist and make the jobs of the men and women of the police department a little bit easier. And not harder, and not only when it's time to hand out stickers and badges and which you need people at those events, but it's got to be a combination of those things. So Fernando and I and the deputy chief, we sat down and created monthly timed commitments for them. And then they had to at least make the firearms a certain amount of times a year. And then, so if they started missing training, then it became difficult. So this is what happened, is it became difficult for this reserve to make our trainings and meet our demands. And we had to sit down with her to be able to say, okay, can we find a solution? How can we help you? And she eventually elected to resign from the reserve program. So currently we have no reserves. And you know, we have to decide if we're when and if we're ready to actually go out and start recruiting again. You know, getting a reserve on board, I mean, Andrea knows it takes time, it takes, you know, training, you gotta get, you know, figure all the details out. We have a lot of things on our plate right now. And I don't think that it's something that we're gonna put all the way to the side, but maybe for a little while we're just gonna hold right here until we get fully staffed, until we figure out what we're doing with equipment wise. And then put out a recruiting process and see what we can find. There again, you need reserves that want to be here all the time. You want reserves that want to be police officers someday. So it's a great mix to have. It's a valuable asset to the agency and to the community if it's run well and the people are here for the right reasons. So
we had a really good reserve program. Excellent.
I mean, I'll say yeah.
It was eight, nine.
Remember how many?
I think it was closer to 10 at one point.
It was a bunch. And they were out all the time, and they did, I mean, they were an awesome asset to the officers. They helped. And it was a sad thing when that fell apart.
Well, and I think we're also dealing with, I know you as coaches, you understand that, and the parents is,
yep.
As I don't think that people are in the volunteerism mode as they once yep. been. They're not as civically minded. I know that there's people out there. Had a big conversation just this morning with a gentleman that wants to volunteer at the school and provide safety and those kind of things. And it seems like that's a rare thing when it used to be fairly common, is that people would give up their time in order to sacrifice for the better good.
I think it's partly that, but I also think the commitments, because what DPSST is wanting committed out of reserves, not just what our agency may want, but what DPSST is going to want and those types of things. It's not like what it was in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s in regards to what reserve commitment was. I mean, it was more kind of like you were talking about. Guys would show up, they come in, a couple hours, but they're not having the mandatory, you know, couple hundred hours of training here, and then the number of stuff that they have to continue, you know, continue education units and all those other things that come around. So it's everything's
changed.
It's
the same thing with fire departments. Yeah. It's just the requirements that it takes for insurance and for liability. The training that they now have to have is just a steep hill for a lot of people.
Well, and as the city, we have to be mindful of, are we putting somebody out there that's benefiting versus the liability? Yep. What are we getting for what we're risking? You know, we're putting people out with guns that have the arrest authority and drive police cars, and you know, are we, you know, do we feel confident that this person is capable of doing that? And I think for the right people, we would probably jump and move into the right positions. You know, maybe somebody in the room that was with former law enforcement that felt like they wanted to be in in reserves. But for those kind of people, that would be something that we would. Quicker in getting the reserve program reestablished and up and running again. But
something I think you should look at before reserves is actually a cadet program. because those are the people that you're going to start bringing into the fold, that are going to fall into the fold here, whether it be here or another agency, but.
I will second that, because that's where I started. It's the Explorer post at the sheriff's office.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that I've seen agencies crumble and fall because of a poorly ran, poorly...
Correct.
And officers losing their professions and their freedoms.
Yes, I saw it firsthand myself. But I mean, it comes down to, again, the right person in the right program. And if I were to do it, if...
So you're volunteering.
No. If you were, if I were to suggest kind of doing what, like, the sheriff's office is doing, is not minors, but 18 to 21.
Yeah.
Hitting that group, because you have them that they don't have the school, but they're kind of that in-between stage because they can't become a cop yet, but that might be something they're interested in moving towards and bringing them in. And doing what we did down there was they only brought in a couple, and then they got them up to speed, worked all that stuff up, and then started adding another one. So you're not taking on 6 or 8 kids at one time. You take 1 or 2 on, get them up, and then they can kind of help the next people behind them moving through.
Yeah, I ran the Explorer program up in Tualatin for many years, and so I think that's a valuable thing. And the conversation that I had, some of you may know Wade Skinner. I spent a lot of time with him today talking just about this kind of stuff. The Explorers and Cadets came up today just talking about it. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you said, and that could be definitely, you know, something that we look for. You know, we're kind of late in the school year to try and probably do it, but maybe next year we can probably look to try and maybe get some Explorers and that kind of stuff. But that requires for us to start writing some policy that deals with those kind of things. And, you know, just get a little bit of equipment involved with it, which shouldn't be too big of a lift for us. But I just wanted to update you where we were with the reserve programs, and just is where it is what it is right now. So we'll work on it.
I think it's a valuable asset to have, and I just hit my 19th year as a reserve, and it does take. I think if I wouldn't have got started back in the day as an explorer, I probably wouldn't have made it this far, but I think just being able to volunteer and give back to the community and shop with a cop, sometimes that gets a little crazy, but I think it's good to have for like the rapport with the kids and stuff too, is to let them know, like, hey, you know, I'm a volunteer and do this. But yeah, there's that balance, and now the requirements and the training, you know, I struggle to make that too, and it's a lot, and it is a commitment for nothing but putting your life on the line. But you remember when I came in here however many years ago that was, I think Eric, you were here too, and talked to the council about I gave a little presentation on the reserve program, and it's not for everybody, that's the thing. And a lot of people, you know, will do it for pay, and, you know, there's a benefit to coming out. You know, you get good pay, and it's an exciting job or whatever, but as a volunteer, it doesn't pay the bills. I'll be the first one to tell you that. But it's, to me, it's just really rewarding, and I have been given a lot of opportunity as a reserve. And yeah, it does take time to get there. But as Todd and most of you guys, Eric, know, almost the entire command staff at the sheriff's office, we were all explorers together, worked up to where they're at now. I didn't clearly make it as far as them, but I'm still here. But I think it is important, and I don't want to see it go away. I would like to see, you know, even if you need some time to figure out what you need to do with it and, you know, get some people involved. But you gotta find the right
one. I think Todd's right, too, with the kids, because it's in their head. They don't know where to go. They don't know how to do it, and then it's lost because they don't know what direction to go. So I think that is, the cadet program is so important. Yep.
We But yeah, and as an auxiliary, you're glued to whatever deputy or in my case with the deputy, like you're basically glued to that person. You don't leave their side under any circumstances. I mean, like you just don't leave their side when you're out there.
Yeah.
You know, but we had the opportunity. I remember working every Friday night in the jail. I did this for years. Every Friday night in the jail and every Saturday night out just on patrol until I got on. I was given the opportunity to be on Marine Patrol the last 3 to 4 years. And so I just spent all day out on a boat enforcing boating laws and rules, which was fun. But you learn a lot. Like, there's so much stuff you just don't know until you get to start doing it. So I think it's good. And it really gives them a good idea before they jump into the position.
Yep.
Is this really what I want to do full time?
Mm-hmm. And it gives the agency to look at them as well.
Exactly.
So just hoping that a site catches everything, or hoping that the boss that they work for told us the truth, right? So.
And they get to see, like, you know, it sounds fun. The job sounds fun. There's lots of excitement. But then you get out there and you might not have anything going on. It could be super boring for every time you go out for a couple weeks. But then you get out on something bad and they might say, I can't do this. Like, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. And then they know. You know, so I think it's good for them to be able to figure that out then too.
No, so nothing. We're not making decisions on the reserve program tonight. We're just giving you the update that right now we don't have any, and we're not going to jump into it right away. We're gonna try and put some thought into it and get it kickstarted the right way. And they'll have expectations, so they know what they're getting into. So we gave expectations to people that were already here, and that had been a reserve under a different regime, doing different things, and not having those expectations. So we gave them expectations, and they, you know, to their credit, they were like, I can't make this, and so they let me believe. I think that's more honorable than someone trying to fake it until they make it type of thing. So, any questions on staff? Operationally wise, we're working on like Isaac said, a lot of projects. He's going to be spearheading some drives for equipment based. Grants, so we need to get our MDT situation figured out. If we get to when county starts dispatching us full time, if we get there, we only have 3 computers that run their current dispatch software. So that's a big need in our department. And so Isaac's running kind of point on trying to look at some grants to help us get some funds for those. Some of those come with stipulations, as all grants do. You have to be able to do so. We're going to be very picky to make sure that we're not locking ourselves into some long-term agreements that we can't fund, or we can't find, or we can't live up to. You know, some of those COPS grants where they tell you, we're going to give you a COP, but you're only getting this amount, and then at the end you have to be able to support that the funding for those positions. So Isaac's doing a great job. He's working on that. He's been on it for a couple weeks now, and there's just he's never done those grants, and so he's a big learning curve for him, and he's jumping in with 2 feet and getting those things prepared for us. Some of them, the way grants work, some of them are due in May, some of them are, you know, due at very different times. You have to do different qualifications, you have to hit certain lengths. So glad we have somebody that can help us with those kind of things. The contract with Lynn County to do our dispatching is still in the works. It should be here probably within the week. I would assume the chief deputy, who's now going to be the interim sheriff, has got back from vacation and has hit the ground running. And so I would imagine that we would know pretty soon what our final cost would be for that. So. And then we're trying to schedule a meeting probably for next week or the week after, where we would have kind of a cutover date. If the contract looks like it's something that's more doable, and have a projected cutover date, so we can start working with a goal in mind of saying this is when we're cutting over. But we don't have that. We have their initial contract that isn't fully complete. So. Yeah, the council will see the Axon contract. We're working really hard to try and get that one up in front of council. Currently isn't part of our budget, so there's a couple ideas out there that the city administrator is working on to try and figure out how to get that funded. And that I think that expires June 13th, or I think it's in June 13th. So the current, we have a gap contract with them right now that allows it, that's covering some of our equipment, some of our storage, and so council will see that on the 13th. So what else are we working on? Oh, we're still trying to categorize all our digital evidence. So far, as of Thursday, we categorized 11,774 pieces of evidence.
Of
87,000.
Just kidding.
Good luck.
Well, we have 87,000 pieces of evidence. There was like 60,000 that was needed to be categorized. So that means we have 45,873 left.
When did you start this?
2 months ago, maybe. A month ago? When did we?
Next year.
Yeah, so I've been trying to do 50 a day, and I don't hardly ever get to 50 a day. And I'm just doing former Chief Morris's, all his video, and he had 6,700. I'm at 3,300 as of today. Something 3,300 or something. So I'm just a little over half.
Would you consider hiring somebody that was trained in doing that?
It's hard. I mean, because they'd have to. What they do really well is since it's their video, they can look at a video and go, oh, I remember this.
Yeah.
And then they can categorize it fairly quickly. You know, I have two problems. One, I get daytime soap opera-ish where I get into the, okay, this is an hour long video, and I trying to figure out why they were called there. That when they have their own video, they know why they were called there. They know what the dispatch was, they know the end result. So it probably takes me a lot longer than it does to take them, because it's their video. They pull up their calls for the day, and if they have trouble figuring out what it was, they can put their case numbers in if they need to or whatever. But to answer your question, it would have been great if we could have done that and just said, this is your project, temporary project, and get it done. I don't think our department has been very successful at getting those contracts, because we had the contract with our UCR lady that she just has ghosted us, and so
if you found the right scenario and the right person, would you be open to that?
Are you volunteering?
No, but I have somebody in mind.
Your wife has nothing to do this summer?
It's not her. they were law enforcement.
They would have to go get CJIS cleared as well, because there's private, personal private data and stuff that's in there.
But potentially they were retired law enforcement.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would be helpful. We'd have to create a contract that the council would then eventually have to see. But, we can go back.
What I'm talking about.
We go back.
I think so.
Talking about it. What was that?
A guy that recently retired from here.
Oh.
Most of the videos are probably his then.
Huh? Well, yeah, So there's like probably 2,000 of his videos is just by himself. So.
I don't know who you're talking about, but.
So just friend of a friend type of a thing, but no, my original plan was I was going to be able to move through mine sooner. And then I would take our admin staff and say, here's your three to get done, here's your three to get done, here's my three to get done, and then we would just continue to work on those. It definitely is not as quick as I had hoped, and they have their regular jobs that they're working, if they have to spend 5 hours to categorize 30 videos, they're missing out on being out on the streets, protecting the community, handling the jobs that we're currently paying them to do, so.
Or you might have more positions to fill.
Huh?
Or you might end up getting more positions to fill. I had to sit and watch 5 hours of video a day.
Well, it'd be video for you, it would be video of you, so.
Uh, I, I, Even worse.
Listen to yours. Well, I would have to listen to myself say it 1,000 times. So, actually, luckily I don't have too much of my video. My video is all cut up. So anyway, I just keeping you up. That's a project that we're working. Most people are going to lose track of that one, but it's a big. When we decided to do this, we knew it was going to be a big lift. We knew it was probably going to be a year or two before we get to the right place. And unfortunately, it's just going to take some time. Constant reminders that, hey, you know, spend a little bit of time every day. Go back. Make sure your current video that you are doing is getting categorized so you're not getting further behind. And right now, the only category that we have set to self-delete prior to, you know, we get a list of these videos are going to be deleted because we no longer need them. They meet our retention period that we set up. Is accidental activations. That's the one we have set up right now. Being deleted. So we're not really deleting a ton, even though there's a ton of accidental activations out there. You know, somebody turns on their taser and then everybody in their rooms, the cameras come on, or, you know, those kind of things. So, but we haven't even really set the retention periods and starting to see the big deletions come off of our digital evidence yet. So that'll be interesting to see where that comes out. Stats-wise, you have the stats. It's 819 traffic stops last month. 819 incidents last month. 313 traffic stops. 114 citations were issued. We had 31 arrests, and 23 of those were CLCs. So, you broke down the parking. And Eric can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is included what our VIPs are doing?
Yeah.
Okay. So our VIPs are included in these parking spaces. We still run into finding out, you know, dealing with the tow companies doing, we'd start talking to them about towing RVs and stuff. And you may have seen the four RVs that showed up over the last week. One of them has been there for a little while, but you know, they multiplied over the weekend or something.
Boy, something sure happened.
So the officers were out today trying to address some of those issues. So, but we get stuck because we get to a point where we could possibly impound one, and then we take some. So, so we're still working on those kind of issues. Any questions on stats or anything?
I thought we were talking about looking at maybe a public works storage area for some of those RVs, potentially.
I know it was mentioned. We haven't started looking at those public. I'm sure public works doesn't want a bunch of RVs out there. And then once you tow them out there, you know, we're still going to be probably responsible for. If you can't get them released to the owner or get them sold, you're going to pay
right.
$3,000 to $4,000 for the disposal anyway, and then you add another tow charge to it. There's just no good solution here. If you had a tow yard that wanted to focus on just RVs, I'm sure there's enough in the county or tri-county area that they could start making a ton of money doing that, maybe. I don't know. Do you have something to say? Yeah, this is a problem. A problem that we knew that you want to get these RVs out of town, but sometimes we can't.
Is that wrong? Is that $100 plus card?
No, what you do is you chip in the tow them down to the 99 and Aubrey, and you just turn around and leave. So,
do you have a hitch?
You got a truck that'll pull it. But yeah, you just get them outside the city. Kind of like Courtesy Transports a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, still hey, you want to go to Eugene?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll go to Eugene.
Last week. You drive to Eugene.
$50 gas cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that might work for a couple of them, but then what happens when they come back into town?
Most one time only.
That's.
Let Fernando deal with it. They won't come in.
Well, one of them doesn't like Fernando, so that's, you know, we're hoping that would accomplish the goal, but it didn't happen. He's still here. So, Fernando's here. No, at my former agency, we never had trailer problem, so we never had the RV problem. So that's kind of new to territory for me, and how to best handle that. You know, we've been trying to gain compliance by just having conversations, tracking the tires, coming back in 72 hours, have another conversation if we can. If we can, we've towed, what, maybe two or three now total. And, you know, we still have a couple that are just problem trailers and RVs. You know, they said they're just one part away from getting on the road and heading to greener pastures, and then that part never shows up, they never get it done, they never accomplish anything. Sometimes they have people that stay in their RVs and leave big piles of trash, so then we cite the person who piled the trash, or we cite, and so the officers are doing a great job, they're staying on top of it. But what I know from my years of working in patrol is that if I can't solve a problem fairly quickly, I can put on a blinder and just go, that's a lot of work, and drive past it. And so it's kind of my job to just kind of give those friendly reminders, hey, let's not let these pile up, let's keep on top of them. You know, and it's not that the community doesn't see four RVs sitting all in one spot. They know.
Yeah.
They know, and, you know, BNI's kind of their storage lots right there, they've been complaining for a long time every time those RVs show up right there up front. So we're working on it. It's not perfect, but we're working on it.
I never have figured out what the draw is. You know, like all of a sudden over there, it's like, what's the, there's nothing
they're
here.
They're everywhere, though.
Well, I know, but there's absolutely.
Part of Lane County using them.
Yeah, but there is absolutely nothing here. Yeah.
Well, the problem is, like that, one of the main ones over there, what happened is they were a problem somewhere else, and we finally put enough pressure on them to get them to move. They moved around the block and parked there, and so now the pressure has to be put on to where it's uncomfortable enough that they decide to move it. They know that they could just move it a couple feet and be and reset the clock, but they're not even doing that because they know that there's no teeth.
No.
So, you know, we give them citations. We, you know, for offensive littering, we're trying different statutes to put on them. You know, one of them park. I think you guys threw a parking citation on one of them today because they're 2 feet. They're off the driveway of the little, you know, and the cutout curb for the driveway to the lot there. So we're trying to be as
annoying.
Yeah.
Persuasive.
Are they associated with any residents over there?
No.
So what about that?
I don't know, but there one. So the big one, I don't know.
The main RV that's been there forever was the one that was parked in the grassy area at Hunton's warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
He
okay.
He got kicked out when ODOT came in, and then he moved to town. And he's been in this general area ever since.
It's actually the railroad's property. It wasn't Hunt's.
ODOT.
Yeah.
ODOT's property, yeah.
What about, how much would it cost to tow them somewhere and drop them off? Especially if it's... Would that be worth it?
You know, not that we want to say this, because it's not being friendly to your neighbor, but if you could get them to... go out of town and park somewhere. One is that our resources are probably, not that county doesn't have resources, but our resources are probably more equipped to deal with them in town. But you put them out by the compound somewhere, and you know, county's probably not going to deal with them all that much. So
county's been dealing with them.
Yeah, well, they have some people that do that on a full-time basis.
Yeah,
but we're really far north in the county, and so the county got a lot of problems. But we can't just kidnap a trailer or commit UUV and take them out. So if there is incentives where we can say, hey, we'll give you $100 gift card to get out of town.
Well, back in the day when there were paper reports, you used to sit right in front of those things with your lights on and write your reports. And you'd sit in front of their car for an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah.
You do that nightly, and they finally get tired of it because their buddies are getting tired of not coming over and buying whatever they're buying or using whatever they're using, and they want to move. So,
yeah.
I think it's time to down 99 to that 99 Beltline area.
Yeah.
Under what authority are we towing them? That's the hard
part. No, it's like as a courtesy tow if they would like to go there.
Yeah.
But it's just like people, well, Portland did it. I think Eugene's done it. where they have funds where, like, if somebody wanted a bus ticket to go back to Nashville where they grew up, they give them a $100 bus ticket and they go to Nashville.
That's how most of them got out here.
Yep. So, but the problem is with those things is they have everything they've ever had or what they think they've ever had inside them, and they don't want to give that up because then they're giving up all their fond memories.
Well, and then you deal with just like the general houseless populations. Is each one of them is there for different reasons. They're houseless for different reasons. It's mental health. It's physical health. It's their own desire to not be associated with jobs or society in general or substance abuses. And so they each, you know, probably out of those four RVs that were that are sitting there, they probably each have different motivations to being where they're at and why they're there. Mm-hmm. I think Nathan went and talked to one of them today, or somebody went and talked to one today, and they moved. They're like, okay, and they moved, right?
Talked to them on Sunday. But yeah.
You talked to them on Sunday, yeah. So it's sometimes it you know, but if we do get to the spot where it's too much hassle and we drive past with our blinders on, then there's no reason for them to realize that they shouldn't be parking next to the three other RVs.
Yeah.
Is that just because it's there doesn't mean we're okay with them all being there.
Right.
And
so you've exhausted everything you know to do, and you're just doing what you legally allowed to do.
Yeah, there are some policies that we could look at. Most of all this houselessness issues are still up in the air. Even the Grants Pass case that was decided on in favor of cities having anti-camping laws doesn't apply to Oregon because Oregon had codified some of their rules in law and in statute, so some of that didn't help us. And that even they're having round two in coming out of Grants Pass, coming up through the Oregon Supreme Courts and stuff. So there's a lot of pause in this field when it's coming to how we can address it. RVs are always going to be difficult because there's people that live in them and they have their basically their home rights to them. But you know, we've talked about it in this committee. We've talked about it.
Yeah, every meeting.
Yeah, where we
that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah, we you know, for the things that we currently have, I think we're doing as much as we possibly can. I think we're doing more than some other agencies.
So you have somebody, you or somebody in the department, keeping an eye on new laws petition coming out that could maybe create a new policy for us.
Yes,
So I think that needs to be the next
job, and I go to the chief's job meetings and stuff, and I get updates on those kind of things. But when we get a policy, you know, it's not gonna, people aren't gonna like the policy that probably because you've got to create not policy but ordinances that apply to everybody in the community. So it's no campers, no trailers on the city's property at all would be the fairest of everything. So that means that the weekend camper that wants to park his or her trailer in front of their house to load up? Nope. Not a lot. That's the best way to do it, but how much inconvenience are we creating to our community to deal with three or four campers? That's the trade-off.
What really needs to happen is the state legislature needs it, because we can define a building that's derelict or to the point of derelict that nobody can live in it, and we can close those down, right? The vast majority of these motorhomes that are people are living in are as substandard, if not worse, than those houses. And until the state legislature makes or passes a law that says that is not, you know, fit for a human living in or even driving in.
We know the current legislature.
The current legislature is not going to do anything about that. They got other things they want to deal with, but yeah.
And we just talked to them at my other job. We like actually had a meeting with some of them where we were talking about that for the living conditions of some of our families.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, that's happening. I mean, we pointed it out. We gave them pictures. We told them brought the health conditions of some of the families with the black mold and everything else in them. And they were just like, we had no idea that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That was their response to us, so.
Well, yeah.
So I think to your point, I mean, it's a conversation, and I know it's there, but we have the same conversation every meeting with the same result if we can't do anything other than what we're doing. So I think it would be nice if the next time we heard about this conversation is when there's something new on the table.
Yeah.
Not repeating the same thing. Not that I don't mind wasting another 30 minutes talking about it, but every week it's the same, every meeting the same way.
Yeah, and part of it was it was important at the time when I started, that you knew that we were dealing with things. What causes us to talk about it is it's part of our package that we normally give you guys, and so it just comes up every time because that's the way we present stats to you. So if we were talking about jaywalking and we were out there focused and it's a line on our thing, we'd start be talking about jaywalking for 20 minutes.
I'm a one-off probably, but we're just spending time talking about nothing because nothing has changed.
Yeah, unless you guys are ready to write.
A new policy,
but
we're limited by law on what those policies are. So,
or I was going to say run for state legislator or something like that.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe mayor.
Okay. Yeah. So, any questions on staff? No. All right. So, transparency, you see, included where we're at currently under our frontline policy, this pro standard tracker. As of last week, we had 9 compliments, 1 complaint, 6 use of forces, 1 pursuit, and 3 conducts. Conducts, are changed because the city has purchased some software that modules that go along with this. So our evaluations will now be done in a partner module to the frontline, and so some of the contexts are where we put our evaluation. Some of them are tardiness. Some of those are, scratches or dents to cars that are done. I'm just trying to bring that to be transparent with you, see where we're at. And then you have a list of information about evidence and stuff that we're working on. If you have any questions on that, we're more than willing to answer your questions, or is it? Yeah.
How in the world, 17 sexual assault cases from 2000, clear back in 2008, how does that even happen?
That's a good question. We've had a lot of help with this inventory before Janet stopped, Corinne. From EPD, I'll reference Corinne. She's the Eugene evidence specialist. So Janet, me, and Corinne touched every piece of evidence, opened every piece of evidence, and in that process is where we started finding some kits that were never sent. I think a lot of the inventories in the past were basically a list that got printed out, and we just made sure the items were still there. Because the big things we don't want are drugs, guns, and money missing, which we didn't have. We don't want any of these sexual assault kits missing, which we didn't have. And we were told when I dropped them off at the lab that we weren't the only agency around here that were delivering all of the kits to them. Some of the agencies, they said, even had a bunch of moldy kits that were sold.
Oh, God. Did it not change at one point to where you have to take them out?
Well, that's what I was about ready
to ask.
Yeah.
Is that laws change over time. So sometimes you take a sexual assault kit where there's no suspect, there's no nothing. So you hold on to it to see if there's something that's going on. So laws have changed where now you get one, a Jane or John Doe kit, and it has to go. So it creates the DNA profile. So there's laws have changed, but I think for an agency our size, 14 is a lot, and there sometimes things get dropped. But for the most part, laws have changed. Is the safest and best answer for us to
say. Yes. I would also say about 7 or 8 of those were no. No, a good handful of them were no, like Jane Doe ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get the no victim, so you have nothing. And at one point in time, it was I don't think the state crime lab wanted anything like that.
They
didn't want to. If you don't have a victim, you don't have a crime, kind of thing, triangle thing that they had.
Well, so. Yeah. And to your point is when he talks about no victim, it kind of seems how do you have a sexual assault kit with a victim? Well, it's a victim that doesn't want to be a victim. And so what they're trying to encourage is the victims to go get the test, and then they can figure out if they have the courage to want to to come forward later and say, I'm a victim of a crime and I want something done about it. Because a lot of times what happens is a month later, a victim of a sexual assault finally gets the courage to come forward and all the DNA evidence is gone. And so what they're trying to do is capture the DNA evidence, let the person have some time.
Sure.
Connect them with a sexual assault advocate if they can at the hospitals so that way they can get help, they can get treatment, they can get counseling, they can get whatever they need. So I think the process is better, but sometimes kids get stored and not sent, right, or they're waiting for that person to come forward and say, I was a victim.
A lot of time what was going on, women would be victim. They'd show up to the hospital looking for emergency kit done to them. Gotcha. Not for the sexual assault, but for any STDs or anything else they may have gotten.
Gotcha.
And the nurse will just automatically do a sexual assault kit, put that off to the side. The victim gets her treatment, she leaves, and then they contact the police department saying, there was a victim that was here, they didn't want to report anything, come get this stuff now.
Okay. So there's no law about how long if there's a no victim, there's a sexual assault kit. Is there no time limit on keeping them?
50 years.
How many?
60 years.
60 years?
60 years out to keep them.
Yeah.
Really?
60. Yeah, and so we're
really lucky we don't have a hospital in town.
Yeah.
Because if your hospital lines, because the hospital gets those kits, and the agency that has that hospital in it gets them all, because the victim may not have said that it occurred in Junction City, that it occurred in Vineyard or Crestwell.
Right.
They may have just said, I was a victim, sexual assault kit's created. That goes into Eugene PD's evidence or Springfield's evidence, and it just sits there for 60 years.
60 years.
But they're supposed to process them now. Right.
Now it used to be that they never processed them.
Yeah.
But that's how they find somebody later. I mean, I think it's right. I don't think it's wrong.
Wrong. No.
It's just we're just catching up. Yeah, we're really doing.
But now what they can do is they can actually process those. Now with the processing them, even though they may not have a victim, they can come out and find out that there's a serial.
There you
person
go.
Because
somebody
finally comes out, but they have him on 8 other ones.
Yeah. Well, I'd like. Somebody just said about DNA. At least get it on there.
Yeah.
Get it so it, like he said, yeah. And that makes sense. This sitting in a closet somewhere, it makes no sense to me. In 60 years.
Part of that was, and we're kind of getting off track, but part of that was because of no victim. But the other part of it, like everything else in government, it's funding. And so there was a time that it was a line item thing. It's like, we don't have the money to be doing all this. Just like I remember when they stopped doing tests on methamphetamines because we don't need to do that. You do it on your precursor test. We're not going to do certain types of amounts of methamphetamine. And then they kick it. Because if they test it and it goes up to the DA's office, they flush it. They've just wasted all that money for a test on something that isn't
being prosecuted. Now they decriminalized it. I mean,
it's back.
Good God.
But there was to Todd's point is that the crime lab has its own funding issues, and there were times where, and I don't know if they've ever come back, was where they wouldn't do DNA or any kind of tests for property crimes. So you could have a burglar where somebody cuts himself and you have blood, they wouldn't test. So unless the DA from each county had to submit a special letter that says, this is an important case to us, please process. Where when I was growing up, you had to find that that always went to the crime lab, and it just happened when I said I was growing up.
And you don't get here in the city, but with the county, what we would get all the time was missing person cases, where we would find, or somebody would find a body out in the middle of nowhere. Well, unless you can point to that person as being, you know, a victim of a crime, they don't do DNA testing on every missing person body. So there's all those things, because I think there's one that's recently where they had to get a grant to send back for DNA sampling of a skull I think they found up in McKenzie recently. That actually has been sitting in an evidence locker for a couple of years. I think it was. It was just in the news that they just finally sent it back for DNA testing. But because it wasn't a victim, you know.
Well, But yeah, probably back when it was, DNA testing was super expensive.
Right.
And now it's price of death. So.
Well, thank you for that.
So Isaac has spent a good portion of his time working to try and get our evidence up and running and to creating processes and procedures so that we're doing things right, and we're, when things come in, that there's stuff that we have to get out as well. So between the two, he's processing the incoming stuff and the outgoing stuff. So he's doing a lot of work, and he's done a lot of good things to get us to where we need to be so that we don't keep losing things, we don't lose track of stuff. We're trying to make it so that the officers aren't in charge of evidence, because that creates a whole other problem for us. A lot of agencies our size end up having officers take care of their evidence, which if I'm going to go testify in court about a case of evidence, which in my case, which I handle my own evidence and process my own evidence, it creates doubt.
Yeah.
So it's nice having some, I mean, that's not nice, it's probably more than a necessity and industry standard to have somebody that's not an officer part of our evidence taking care of us that way. But there's still a lot of work, right? So we're sitting down, we sat down with the EPD, and they came over to our evidence room that we have now, and we were like, okay, what are we missing? And they gave us a list of three to five things that we need to have in our evidence, and there's a little bit of money left in that evidence room budget, and so we're going to go get a couple things and finish that whole evidence room off, making sure that everything we need to process evidence, even if we have a major case or a major crime, that we're going to be able to handle some stuff that we weren't able to handle in the past, that we would have to count on other agencies for. So.
You better be really, really nice to Isaac, is all I can say.
He did say he'll come to my next year's lunch. As long as it's not on a Tuesday or a Thursday. So
okay, that's good.
We're making headway with him.
So, yeah. I was sleeping, otherwise I would have been there.
Yeah, so see how much I make.
Priorities.
No, thanks for the explanation. And again, there's so much people don't know. They don't, like you said, oh, I didn't know that. I had absolutely no idea. It's like, they're like this, you know, and it's sad and very frustrating, but yes, thank you.
We appreciate you.
Our rules.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We appreciate you.
As you can see through the packet there, that we had some officers and some people attending training, including myself. I went to a chief's conference last week in Pendleton. So we're continuing to try and get as broad of education as we can from outside and bring it back to us. We're trying to establish relationships with other agencies in Lane County. One of the things we're working on for training-wise is trying to create a small little agency firearms training team. So that we, you know, when we do put our range to day together, that we include Coburg, and Coburg would include us, and then, you know, we, instead of trying to go out, use an entire range day with an instructor and take one or two officers up there, we take five or six and share resources when it comes to that kind of stuff. So we reached out to all the local chiefs and the sheriff, and they're all kind of interested in it. It's probably somebody, maybe myself or somebody that needs to take the lead on that to get it done. But that's a way that we can start sharing those resources again and be making ourselves that we're good partners with our law enforcement brothers and sisters. And then just getting top quality training when we can.
Mm-hmm.
So having extra bodies out there to allow people to go to training is also an amazing benefit. So now that we're getting close to fully staffed, and we get to the point that it frees up their schedules just a little bit, that we can move things around and get them into training. So it's a benefit to us. I already see it. So
good.
Information. Those of you on the council know that this is happening. I don't know if you two know. Is that we're suspending the public safety committee starting in July. So there was a discussion at council that took place, and it's suspended. The city is trying to move to more community meetings to get involvement. I mean, you two have been great assets for us, but when you're trying to get community involvement, it's you two. You know, you see nobody shows up in our meeting. Not nobody. You guys are important to me. But the community doesn't come to these things. They're not logging in. I'm not sure if we can track how many people are going to the website and grabbing the minutes or watching the videos, and I don't know. So the city's trying to reach different ways to reach out to the community, and so they're going to have community meetings where the public works will be there. We'll have a representative. We'll talk about some of the things that we normally talk about, and our doors are always open to answer questions. I don't know if you two, I know you both have opinions, so.
Oh boy, do I. No. Just don't ask me, because I'll tell you.
So, I don't know if you two need some more explanation than that.
Well, I actually think it should have happened a long time ago, personally.
It's an antiquated system.
Yeah.
It has
been. That's what I was trying to offer you.
Trying to offer me the other volunteer position?
Other volunteer position.
If you're a council member, you're just bogged down by meetings that you can't really make decisions on. I think it's better to have a full council and have a work session or a couple more work sessions and get rid of the committees. They're really kind of insignificant in a lot of ways.
Yes.
The only thing is that I think, especially public safety and public works, I really feel like you guys need this. You need to be able to discuss in a group. That's how I feel about it. I don't think eliminating you or public works, that's not on my top 10.
Yeah.
The others, there's so many times it's like, I really don't have anything this month. That's good. That's fine. Okay. But I don't think there is a month that you have said, nah, there's nothing going on.
One time.
But
generally,
that's how I feel about it. I think that there's got to be something done for you in public works. I don't feel comfortable just saying, because the public has not been visible at any of these meetings and not visible at any council meetings. They may listen online, maybe they do Zoom, but we still don't hear from them.
Until they're mad.
Yeah,
and
maybe
this. Yeah. I don't know. I wanted to keep the meetings. I think I'm the odd one out, but I kind of find value in it. And like I said, I feel like sometimes we do accomplish it. I think the Axon thing was a big one where we listened to what you and Eric did. You guys got that presentation for us, and I felt like, you know, if I wouldn't have been on this committee and it would have been, you know, somebody else here, and then the council brought that, or the committee brought that to council, I have, right now, faith in our council that they were bringing all the information, you know, and so I'm like, okay, like, I believe in, you know, them, that they feel this is a good idea, let's vote and move on, because now I think we're just going to have super long freaking council meetings. And where we're going to be discussing all of this stuff now at council. And
I think if you want community involvement, though, it's the wrong time of day. You look at most communities, they have their work sessions during the day. That's where you're going to get community.
Well, those council meetings or those councils are paid. They're bigger communities that.
Sometimes.
Well, I don't.
But I think if people wanted
but
to
that
be.
Has nothing to, that has nothing to do with. If you want to get reached,
if you have meetings during the day, Andy wouldn't be able to make it. She works.
I barely make these.
And there's other people that work. So that's what I'm saying as far as daytime stuff.
Yeah. But you'll get a different group of people that would run. It's a faceless conversation. But you may see a whole different category of people that would run during the day. If it was a daytime meeting. That's what I think.
Well, I really like the way that we've done the public safety meetings, because it's generally a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes we can get into, you know, part of me is trying to figure out, when I first got here, what this committee is for. Am I asking permission or am I letting you know, right? And so that's where it took us some time, and I think in that time where I was asking permission, I think that we got into a point where people started putting their fingers into the kind of the inner workings of the departments, and not just this department, but other departments. And you know, it's got to be difficult for you as counselors, because if you guys walk, you know, in a committee, there's two, sometimes three of you, that after talk conversation that you would normally have,
it's a quorum.
It could be a quorum, and you know, creates issues. But I don't plan for me to not be available for you guys to have conversations anytime that you have. And I hopefully that I can reach out to each and one of you and say, hey, we're thinking about this, and this is what you're going to, I'm hoping you two are, you know, you're already on the foundation, and having access to the police department. I'm hoping that doesn't change. And I'm actually hoping that we bring less things to you as we get settled. The kind of the growing pains, the honeymoon period's over, where we can get more stable, kind of maybe off topic, when you talk about long council meetings, maybe the council doesn't need to approve street closures for everything.
That's, yeah.
I'm already bringing that up at council,
okay.
So.
Because, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm already going to bring that up,
yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked about it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I think that you guys, the council's, just my personal opinion, and it's probably not the right place to be putting it out here, but. Is that trust your department heads to make decisions?
Exactly.
Your city administrator to make decisions.
Yeah.
That's what you hired them, had them for.
Yep.
And then, you know, then shorten your, you know, own the things that really come to you are the things that really matter and need your guys' attention and details, instead of us creating, you know, spending 20, 25, 30 minutes, 45 minutes on an AIS for a street closure that, you know, when in the history of council have you guys ever not approved Scandinavian Festival
right.
street closure?
Right.
It's just does it seems
it
like
doesn't
we're doing work to do work rather than to be efficient. So
yeah. Yep.
So I'm gonna get off my soapbox before I get in trouble. But you have stats. I included a updated vehicle list because you guys haven't seen one in a while. The things in red on that list are things that we're hoping to go away pretty soon because they have 150 to 170,000 miles on them. So there's two Tahoes that are have substantial mileage on them right now. So, which I printed off the wrong one. Sorry.
It's not pink anymore.
I know. Well, I had all the staff go out and get mileage, and I printed off the wrong one because the mileages were all on one business. So that was my fault. Physics, sorry, not yours. So anyway, we're gonna take one of them apart and get it sold because it's the one that doesn't have air conditioning and it just needs to go away. But you know. You may see it through part of our discussion with you, especially with you as council, is that because we have some things that we need to work on, we're probably going to forego asking for a car this year, and hopefully we can get computers and Axon approved. And so we're trying to give and take. We're just, even as much as I want to keep asking for things, we're going to slow that down just a little bit, I think. So, any questions? No, I think that, yeah. That's it for department updates.
All right, committee member comments? Anything from anybody?
I think I spilled my guts.
You guys good?
Mm-hmm.
You too? Anything else? Okay, anything from the audience? Thank you guys for being here.
Yes, I'm so glad you come. Yes, good to see you.
All right, then we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 8 o'clock.
8:00.
Sorry.